I've been coming to this conference for 20 years now, on and off, and it's a joy to be here. And it's kind of funny because today I have had a paper and I'm presenting to you something that is purely aesthetic. And that is because we're at a time in stereoscopic cinema where the tools are there, the tool sets are there, they're transparent, and they now can be assembled and used. What was that? They can be used for storytelling in a new way, telling stories in Z-space. And to do that, first we need to think in Z-space. We need to understand what that means. And this understanding is entirely absent in the movie-making culture, despite the fact that 3D films are now here to stay. And this is an examination of why that is. I believe that 3D, that spatial imaging, stereoscopic expression and feeling, is the elephant in the room of visual culture. And what that means is, I think all art, representational or abstract, paintings, all visual expression is a drive to create and express spatiality, the immersive nature of what we as mammals with two eyes and haptic tactility in the way that we experience the space of the world that we live in. All art attempts to express that. I've had numerous abstract artists who you would think were not concerned about three-dimensionality in their art tell me that their abstract painting was an exploration of space. How could that be? 3D is the elephant in the room, and the irony is that culturally, critically, theoretically, stereoscopic imaging and 3D movies have gotten no respect, essentially. They're still not getting respect as cinematic art, and only just now are stereoscopic gallery artists, 3D artists, starting to exhibit in a photographic space, like a wonderful new show at the Annenberg Space for Photography in Los Angeles, a show called Digital Darkroom, has a large stereoscopic component. 3D movies have not generally been written about or regarded as cinematic art. And let's take a little look at the roots of this bias, how essentially 2D imaging, 2D culture of visual art stole my beloved 3D, preempted it by inferring it rather than conveying it and truly using Z-space experience with binocular stereopsis. Max Beckmann came clean. He completely expressed for us the idea. He said that what he had to do as a painter was to take the rich world of dimensionality, the immersive spatial world that we live in, and transfer it. He was a 3D conversion artist, or a 2D conversion artist, as most of the visual artists for the past 500 years have been. They have had to take the world of 3D and convert it to 2D, to infer 3D on a flat surface. And so here Max Beckmann, God bless him, is coming clean. He's telling the truth about, essentially, not just his art, but all visual art. And his art, interestingly, his expressionist work, is pre-Renaissance in the absence of perspectival, single-point perspective in the way that he created his paintings. He worked the imagery all across the canvas, as with this family picture, arranged across the shallow surface. It is Byzantine. It is the kind of art you see pre-Renaissance. So the culprits, the clever guys, the clever painters and inventors of the Renaissance, they began this great theft of our heritage by inferring depth using perspective and art for one eye, as with Jacopo Bellini in this drawing, the Annunciation, showing the use of a vanishing point perspective. But really, it's Leonardo da Vinci who perfected the science of this and to illustrate how precisely how the necessity of transferring the three-dimensional world of existence, of human existence, onto a flat plane, he created the stereo window, which was a device to essentially make a one-eyed view. He even wrote in his treatise on painting that it was a disadvantage to the painter to have two eyes. So this is where this technique that we see in caricatures of painters closing one eye as an aid to transferring the three-dimensional richness of the figure or the scene they're rendering onto a 2D plane. The Leonardo window. At the same time, a good friend of Leonardo's was Paolo Uccello, who was obsessed with perspective. And he could have become a very wealthy painter of the patrons of the time. But he insisted on exploring perspective. And an interesting panel in one of his works, The Profanation of the Host, you can see he both used single-point perspective and undermined it in the same image as well. The great artist and biographer Vasari wrote that he noted in his Lives of the Artists how obsessed Uccello was with perspective. One of Da Vinci's drawings, some of his drawings, clearly show he understood the effect and the mechanics of binocular vision. And here he compared binocular and monocular vision in his treatise on painting. And you see the greater order of complexity that visual art was able to dispense with. The problem, of course, was how do you display, how do you deliver a binocular experience stereoscopically? That's always been the problem, right? So when cinema was invented, one of the things that, since 3D is the elephant in the room, that drove the invention of cinema, not just photography, 3D, of course, preceded the invention of photography. Wheatstone in 1838 essentially discovered, enunciated, and proved what stereoscopic vision is and created the stereographic geometric drawings. He drove the invention of stereoscopic photography by contacting Fox Talbot and Daguerre and movie makers. He even made a 3D movie himself very early. But when cinema started, it was fundamentally trying to be 3D, even though it was one camera and one projector and displayed on a flat plane. So that the way that binocular stereo was stolen from early cinema was to move the subject matter on the z-axis. And the famous Lumiere train did precisely that. And in the novelty period of 2D cinema, which lasted for about 10 years, from 95 to 05, Phantom Ride films and movies made and shot on obliques or the z-axis were very popular, as with this Phantom Ride film. That's Billy Bitzer, D.W. Griffith's great cameraman, shooting on the cowcatcher of a train, and he shot a number of these novelty ride films that were shown in a number of interesting venues, like Hale's Tours, which was exhibited inside a rail car that actually moved, and it was very experiential. So Z-axis movement compensated for the flatness of the motion picture screen, which I am telling you is a deficiency, a defect of cinema. And in fact, art itself has been defined and has defined itself by how it dealt with this deficiency, the deficiency of true binocular stereoscopic depth. So artists achieved great cunning and very deceptively were able to infer depth on the XY. So the job of the artist was essentially to deal with this deficiency. One of the great visionaries of stage design was Robert Edmund Jones. And we can look at writings of Jones and other early writers about film and revisit their observations about cinema as it evolved with innovations such as sound, color, and depth, and see how this resistance in the existing community of artists invested in plein art expression, how that dynamic works. So Jones came out to Hollywood to consult on Technicolor. He had an understanding of how color could be used dramatically because he had used it for years on Broadway and created very innovative staging, upstage and downstage, theatrically, using the third dimension as well as color to convey narrative ideas. And he said, the color pictures now being made, writing in 1938, after three-strip Technicolor films had just started, the studios are not making color pictures at all. Black and white thinking still dominates the screen. Substitute a few words in there. 2D thinking is still predominating in the 3D movies that are being made. There's very little understanding of how the cinematic screen is no longer planar. It's no longer merely XY. It is a theatrical stage, the entirety of which must be used for full aesthetic expression. And somebody who understood this, and there's great irony in the fact that Eisenstein, one of the great proponents of montage, he understood this, writing the last essay on stereoscopic cinema just before his death. He had a visionary understanding of how the language of stereoscopic cinema is fundamentally different than the visual grammar of planar cinema. And my use of the term planar cinema, I have to thank Mr. Lenny Lipton for that, because it was from his lips that I first heard that term. Eisenstein, with this drawing of this from the Spottiswoode's book, he understood that this is a fundamentally different grammar and new way of thinking from 2D thinking when he wrote A Place Must Be Prepared in Consciousness for the arrival of new themes multiplied by the possibilities of new techniques that demand new aesthetics. What Casimir has had to deal with, and what any stereographer who goes on to a set, goes on to a production, making the stereoscopic imagery is a piece of cake, getting the tool sets and using them. The hardest part of it is creating the understanding, and primarily in the minds of the director and the director of photography, that they are not burdened with having to do something additional. What they are being offered is a chance to tell stories in a new way. Their palette, their narrative palette, their palette for emotional engagement with the audience has been expanded, it's opened up. But it's a threat to professionals who are vested in the existing visual grammar of 2D cinema. Let's look at two writers who were writing about film as sound was inaugurated. Rudolf Arnheim, one of the great theorists of art and movies, in his book Film as Art, expressed reserve. He was very concerned that as cinema became more realistic with sound, color, and 3D, it would become less an art. And he actually said that the artist in cinema was supplying a deficiency by conveying depth on the planar screen. So that was the job, that's been the job of filmmakers for a century, to infer depth in the absence of the ability to truly depict it in XYZ. And Raymond Spottiswoode, ironically, writing very early, years before his work with 3D film, was also wary about the advantages of greater realism in the cinema with color and sound. And he even characterized color as another step backward, on the road backward to a mere imitation of life. And in the same essay, he kind of touched upon the interesting and haptic, tactile idea of what stereoscopic cinema is. And I just could not resist putting this MGM promotional photo of Polly Bergen from a 3D film called Arena with his quotation there. There were two early visionaries of 3D cinema, Eisenstein and André Bazin, who, writing in his book, What is Cinema?, right after the 3D movies of the early 50s, he wrote that the days were gone when it was enough to make cinema in order to deserve the seventh art. The seventh art, it's interesting, just the term seventh art conveys the idea that cinema was a culmination and collected all of the prior arts together into a new canvas. And when he wrote, while we wait until color or stereoscopy provisionally return its primacy to form and create a new cycle of aesthetic erosion, on the surface, cinema has no longer anything to conquer. Lenny referred to 3D as the last innovation for cinema, and that's precisely what Bazin is enunciating here. But when he writes about the primacy of cinema's form and a new cycle of aesthetic erosion, what might that be? What is aesthetic erosion? Perhaps he was talking about, let's use sound for example. The silent film achieved its preeminence because it was visual. And when sound came in, slapstick comedy, visual comedy, went out of vogue. It basically pretty much disappeared. And dialogue started to drive comedy. So we saw fast-talking comedies. Writers came out from New York to write these fast-talking comedies. Comedy itself changed over this 10-year period. Could that have been the cycle of aesthetic erosion, whereby the art changed? Here is a... 2 minutes? Okay. Here's a chart of technology and artistry. And this shows the watersheds. In how the technology has impacted where we are today. Narrative versus spectacle is the idea. We've got a visual modality which can undermine the narrative. How do we foreground the story? Montage was the chief glory of silent cinema, as with the work of Griffith, Eisenstein. But even in 2D cinema, we can look for great examples how the 2D screen inferred depth with Citizen Kane, Greg Toland's Deep Focus. And this film is a great candidate for conversion to stereo. And Jean Renoir, these are both examples Bazin cited in his essay on the evolution of cinema. Direction and depth relative to the screen. And Bazin understood that the search after composition in depth is a partial replacement of montage. Rapid cutting montage could not possibly have been developed to that extent, or would not have been, had the screen been stereoscopic at that time. That's what Arnheim actually speculated about in his 1933 writings on film as art. Eisenstein knew that the point of art, whether it's the opera or cinema or a 3D movie, is to bridge the gulf between the audience and the story, the imagery. And Bazin had this sense of where things could go and what it's all about. There's the idea of the box office is also implicit in this wisdom and this observation. So I've written 4 books. The 2 on the top are available now, and the 2 on the bottom are coming out this year later. And these books, I've written these books basically to set a context whereby 3D movies and all of stereography could be discussed as art, not a gimmick, but as something fully expressive and valid on equal measure, equal footing with painting, sculpture, all of the elder arts. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. And just before we do questions, straight after the Q&A on this, there'll be some home movies on the big screen to see some movies captured with commercial video camera or a consumer device to see what it looks like on the big screen. But now, questions for Ray. Mike Wiseman.
Thank you, Ray. Will you come back again and complete the story?
The story is never ending. It's continually unfolding. What interests me now in writing is to write about the aesthetics. It's really the artistic possibilities that stereoscopic tool sets present to the storyteller. I think a great strategy for a director of 3D films is to direct a play. And I'm looking forward to The Great Gatsby because it's directed by Baz Luhrmann, who has come from theater. He's directed opera. So he understands inherently the concept of upstage and downstage. And there are a lot of 3D films that I don't get this sense at all that I see at the cinema, a theatrical space. So, but yes, I'd be happy to do that.
More questions? Over here. If you could introduce yourself, please.
I'm Sidra Lalden from York University. So my question is, like, you know, even when you see, as you said in your talk, you see 3D films, there's no risk toward 3D language. I mean, it's usually the debate is because eventually they're going to be brought out on